club one day, and I knew I wasn't going to get home. I'd already made up my mind. I've had all this dang fun I can take. I can't take no more of this. I either got to go kill myself or take a drink, and I'm going to go take a drink. I'm done with AA. And I turned around, and there was an old guy there that these people and me and all that in Vegas love very much. His name is Ted Davis. And he's one of the softest human beings you've ever met in your whole life. He's devoted his life to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I've devoted mine because of him. He built a room on his house where we have a meeting, and he was standing behind me, and I looked at him, and I said, before I go drink, I'm going to try something. I said, will you please be my sponsor? And before he could say anything, because I hate rejection, I still do, I said, I'll do anything you tell me. And he looked at me, and he said, Billy, it would be an honor to be your sponsor. Let me describe Alcoholics Anonymous to you. This past year, I retired, so I have a lot of people come at me, ask me to be their sponsor that's got a long term on sobriety, and that's always an honor. I do a lot in AA. I do the prisons, I do the jails, I do the Skid Row detox. I'm on the board at Samaritan House, which is next door to the Skid Row. I go to 12 to 14 meetings a week. I don't say that you have to do that, and don't compare yours with mine. If you go to 5 or 6 and you're doing fine, that's great. Don't think that I'm better AA than you, because I'm not. You know, and so, but this is what I got a Christmas card from a guy, and it describes Alcoholics Anonymous better than I can ever describe it. It's a guy in this deep hole, and he's been in this hole for a long time. And a doctor walks by, and the guy yells up to the doctor, will you please, sir, I've been in this hole for a long time. Could you please help me get out of the hole? And the doctor writes him some prescriptions and drops him down into the hole. And pretty soon later on, here comes a priest come by, and the guy is down in the hole. And he yells out, sir, will you please help me? I've been in this hole for years and I can't get out. Will you help me? And the priest writes some prayers on some piece of paper and drops him down into the hole. Pretty soon I'm in that hole and here come my sponsor. And I yell up, sir, will you please help me? Will you please? I've been in this hole and I can't get out of my hole, out of this hole. And my sponsor jumps down into the hole. And I go, boy, are you stupid. Now we're both stuck in this hole. And my sponsor says, no, we're not. I've been in this hole before, and I know the way out. And that's what Alcoholics Anonymous is all about. See, we got 12 steps to get you out of this hole, you know. And so I hooked up with this guy, and he got me involved. That's the wrong thing to tell Ted Davis. I'll do what you tell me. Because he started me doing things. He said, first thing I want you to do is go on a 12-step list. I said, well, I'm not a real alcoholic. You know that. He says, tell them that. They'll like that. I said, you don't understand. I'm so angry, I want to rip their face off. He says, tell them that. He said, Billy, don't try to be something you're not. Just get them to the meeting to us. And so I got that old van, and I started piddling around and picking these drunks up. And they must knew I would come at central office, because they call me all the time. And I just picked them up, and I know today it saved my life. At 5 years sober, I was going to quit AA. You know, I just going to commit suicide again. I was going through a divorce, and I thought my life was over. And my sponsor says, you need to get really involved in AA. I said, I still couldn't understand what he was talking about. And I did a fourth and fifth with him. And if you're new here, or maybe just quite a few years, and you're just going through the motions of doing this thing, that's what it is. You know, intellectually, I understood what was going on here for a long time. But I've spent the last 13 or 14 years of my life putting in action all the stuff that I learned the first 10 years, because the first 10 or 12 years, it's like up here. It's a long ways from this here down to my heart. And it takes a long time to understand that that's what it's all about. It's about making AA the center of my life, and I didn't know how to do that. Because at 10 years, I quit AA. Because I was going through this, I guess I'll tell some of you guys this, that's got the same problem I do. I married the same woman over and over. I've only been married to one woman, but I married her a lot and live with her a lot. And we're like oil and water. We both need to be in a car, but we don't mix. And she called me right before I come up here and wished me well. I still take care of her. We've been divorced for 17 years. I still mow the yard, do the pool. Not because I'm a good guy, because my sponsor says I have to do that. So at 10 years sober, I was going through a divorce, and I quit AA, and my sponsor said, come over to my house, I want to talk to you. I went over to his house, this is what he said. He said, now that you're divorced, and you got plenty of time, I want you to devote your life to Alcoholics Anonymous. I said, Ted, listen to me real close. I'm sober 10 years, so I'm not no dummy. I'm back living in a one-bedroom apartment with plastic furniture. My sponsor has a beautiful home with a big pool and a jacuzzi and all the stuff with all the furniture that is custom made. I'm back in this. What I need is, I don't need a newcomer, I need another job. He said, money will never be your problem. I said, Ted, you have $250,000 house, you have a 40-foot boat out front with a new Lincoln Continental. Money's not your problem, money is mine. I need another job. He says, do me a favor. I said, okay. Just try for 2 years to devote your life to Alcoholics Anonymous and see what happens. I want you to really get involved. I want you to go back to St. Vincent's. I want you to go back to the jails. I want you to go back to the prisons. I want you to really make AA the center of your life and see what happens. This is the third thing that we talk about. What it did was it started to heal this sickness, this spiritual malady that I have in my thing. My sponsor described alcoholism like this. If you have a carpenter, he just has a hammer. Nothing's going to happen. If he has hammer and nails, nothing's going to happen. If he has hammers and nails and lumber, beautiful things can happen. It's a threefold disease. I have a physical allergy with a mental obsession. An obsession is something that owns you. You have no power over it. And I have a spiritual sickness. And the 12 steps are designed to treat this spiritual sickness that I never have to go back and have this mental obsession come back. The drink is like Keith Lewis says, the drink is always out there for someone like me. And the more I do in AA, the more it pushes it out. And the less I do, the closer it comes. And I'm sicker than most, so I do more than most. You know, I says, you sure talk a lot. And I said, yeah, and I do a lot too. So it lets me talk a lot, you know. And so that's what I found out for me was, is this. Most of it has to do with the third step. If you look at the steps that are designed with prayers, the second step, and Bill mentions prejudice in the Agnostics three different times. You've got to get prejudice against all religions, against all colors, against all creeds. I'm a redneck from the South. I'm sober quite a few years, and somebody would do something. I said, no wonder he does that. He's black. No wonder he did that. He's a Mexican. No wonder he did that. He's right. Then I tell myself, you can't be like that. You're down at that detox center where these guys are dying every day. You watch them die every day. You need it. If it's our Father, which I believe, that means we're all his kids. We're all brothers and sisters. So I got on my knees, and I started asking this God, please help me. And when you have a character defect and you ask God to help you, he has to put you in those situations where you can work on it. If you ask God to help you with your anger, he's got to piss you off so you don't get so angry. And so I go to this detox center, and I go down there, and I tell these guys, you know, if you call me before you get out, you'll have a better chance. If you go home to your girlfriend, and I give them the same routine every day, and I say, if you have the best chance, if you'll call me right before you get out of here, I'll come and pick you up, and I'll do what they did for me. I'll take you to a meeting. So one day my phone rings, and I pick it up, and I go, hello. He says, hi, this is Jerome Jackson. I said, okay, where you at, buddy? He says, I'm at the detox center. You said call before I get out, so I'm getting out. I said, all right, what do you look like? He said, well, I'm black. I said, well, I can tell that on the phone. I said, what do you look like? I said, I'll tell you, I got a better idea. Just go stand in front of the detox center, and I'll come and pick you up. So I picked him up. He's 44 years old. He gets in my truck, and I says, when's the last time you ever listened to country music? He says, I never have. I said, today's your first day. He looked at me, and I says, listen to me. What do you like? He says, I like rap. I said, okay, if I ever get in your car and you change that station from rap to country, I'm going to take my fist and hit you as hard as I can. He said, man, where are you coming from? I said, listen, you be who and what you are, and I'll be who and what I am. This is what you see is what you get. And maybe you and I together can fill up this big hole we have in our gut. He says, man, I hear you. I said, all right, what do you do for a living? He says, I've never had a job in my life. I said, wait a minute, Jerome. You had to do something, Burger King or McDonald's or something. He says, I'm from the hood. I said, well, I don't have any idea what a hood is. Maybe it's something you put on your head. That's the only hood I know. He said, Billy, all I've ever did in my whole life is drugs and girls. I said, you're 44 years old? He says, and I've never had a W-2 form in my life. I said, oh, my God. I said, come on, I'll get you a place to stay. I said, you can start out with day labor. He says, I don't do day labor. I said, get out of the truck. I said, this is not negotiable. We're talking about your life. He says, I'll do day labor. That was a little over 4 years ago. And he went to day labor. Then he got a job in the hospital cleaning the pans. And he got a job in a hotel. And he cleaning the bathrooms and stuff. About 3 or 4 months ago, he was promoted to, he is now assistant shift boss at this hotel. He got a huge raise. And not because of nothing other than he's a great employee. Not only did it turn out to be a sponsor thing, he turned out to be one of the best friends I've ever had in my whole life. This daughter I've been telling you about, this daughter can't work any place. This daughter's completely smoked herself in Las Vegas. Las Vegas is a town of 1.5 million. But the gambling business is like a cup. You don't do anything in that somebody don't know about. And she had a great job, and she always keeps jobs long because she's such a hard worker. I've watched her. She can outwork any living human that ever lives. But sooner or later, they just can't stand it anymore like they couldn't stand me, and they got to let her go. And last time she was stupid enough, she took the drug test, which she couldn't pass, and the word went out that she passed, that failed the drug test, and so which absolutely smoked her. Jerome come to me and says, listen to me. What I want you to do is I want you to tell Debbie to go over to the hotel and put in an application. I said, not a chance. Not a chance. You finally got a halfway decent job that you've worked your butt off for that you deserve. I said, she will ruin that for you. So he talks this hood talk that I don't understand. He says, I'll get her in the car, and it's up for her to stay in the car. I said, what does that mean? He says, that means I'll get her the job, be up to her to keep it. And I said, Jerome, I'm telling you, don't do this. I said, listen to me. You don't owe me nothing. He says, Billy, you're full of crap. I owe you my life. I said, that's not true. He said, then how is it, well, you always talking about how you owe Ted your life, and I don't owe you? He says, don't you feel good when you do something for Ted? I said, the greatest honor I ever had was when Ted called me and asked me to 12-step his oldest son. And I said, you know something, Jerome? You're right. Go do what you want to do. And he got her in, and they love her. They think she's been working her less than 2 months. You know, isn't it amazing how I forget that you need to help me so that you can feel good? Isn't it amazing how I always say, do you like to do something? No, Billy, I'll do. That's okay. I'll do it myself. You know, and who needs friends like that? You know, here's a kid that's not even 5 years sober, got a better mind than I do and a better understanding. He can't get a driver's license to the year 204. And when they call him, from, he tells them from detox, this is truth. He lives way out. Call me before you get out of here and I'll come and pick you up. And one day a guy called and he gets on the cat bus and he rides a long ways. He has to change buses and ride another bus and goes picks him up. He goes to meetings as many as I do and he has no transportation. And I tell all them guys I sponsor, you get there and I'll get you home. But I ain't going to get you there. And so what turned out to be just going down to trying to get rid of a little thing that I thought was really bothering me. And now God really must have heard me because I've got a lot of people that's got different religions and everything. And it's just what it's done, it just made my life so much richer. There's one other thing I want to talk about. And this really is just happened. I talked about it when I met Harlan down in, there was a friend of mine came into my life a few years ago. He's the only guy that I ever told that I wouldn't sponsor. He was a vascular surgeon. He was one of the top vascular surgeons on the West Coast, and he come and asked me to be a sponsor, and I told him, I said, you know, Chuck, you're the only guy I'm going to turn down. I got an 8th or 9th grade education, probably about a 7th. And I said, you got more things up on the wall than I've ever seen. He said, that's true, I do. He said, but Billy, you're doing two things I'm not. I said, okay, what's that? He says, you're staying sober, and you seem to be having a lot of fun, and I'm not doing either one. And I said, okay, Chuck, maybe I can help you with that. And not only did it turn out to be a thing, it was another thing. It turned out to be a great, great, great friendship. We fished together, went to Mexico, and just had a ball together. And he only one thing. He's the only doctor I knew that was broke. What he did was he got married a lot. And he got married in California a lot, where there's a lot of alimony, you know. And I was the best man at one of his weddings. I told him, I'm out from now on. I ain't doing this no more, you know, if you can't make it stick. And he moved out of town. He moved down to Texas, and he called me up one day, and he said to me, he says, I'm coming back to Vegas. I need you to find me an apartment and see if you can give me a place. And Marguerite's going to bring the kids up after school's out. And I said, all right. I said, I got a better idea. Chuck, why don't you just come and move in with me and live with me? Because I know you're broke. You're always broke. He said, well, I would feel guilty if I didn't. I said, well, then don't worry about it. Throw $200-$300 on the table every month, and that'd be RF&B. He said, what's that? I said, room, food, and beverage, and phone. And I'm a good cook. He says, okay, that's a good deal. I'm just trying to do my friend a favor. And he moved in. One day, my daughter walked in, and she's coughing. She's living in the streets again. And Chuck says, boy, that's a bad cough. I said, well, she smokes a couple packs of cigarettes a day. And he said, that has nothing to do with cigarettes. He says, I don't know what that is. That's out of my field. But I know two people that can, that does. I said, Chuck, she has no insurance, no nothing. I said, just go ahead and I'll take care of it. He says, I got a better idea. He gets on the phone, he calls these guys, he sends her over there. And she come home the first day with a sack full of medicine, about $300 worth, and they couldn't find out what was wrong with her. And so they start running tests on her, and they finally took some saliva off her tongue, and they run a test on her. And she had an infection in the bottom of her lung. And if they hadn't have found it, she would have died. And I'm just letting my buddy come to live with me to save him money. Isn't it amazing? Every time I try to help you, I get gifts beyond. God is so good in this, you know, with the things that he has given me. There's a sad ending to that story. That was February the 28th of this month. So Chuck had been sober a long time. He got cancer. The cancer went into remission. He went back out and tried to get a job. And the first couple people turned him down. I called him a couple times. I didn't get a message. And February the 28th, he put a shotgun in his mouth and pulled the trigger. And it really started making me thinking, because he was sober a long time and he had everything in the world going for him. And so why is it that some of us, and Minnie's ex-husband, a good friend of mine, Mr. A at one time, A poster boy, 23 years sober, put a plastic bag around his head, put a rubber band around it. And I work in detox a lot. And so when you come to the conventions, we all look good and we got these suits on and everything, but I work where they die every day. So I get a different perspective. And maybe that's the reason I do so much, because I see the disease kill all the time. I had a 21-year-old girl. She was going up to the mountains. Going up to the mountains for 4 months. She said, let me go home and get some clothes. And she went home to get some clothes. 21 years old, put her needle on her arm, and her heart stopped. Just 21 years old. And I see that all the time. And so I was thinking, and I heard something, and I don't even remember the speaker, but I heard it when I was first sober. And he says, Alcoholics Anonymous is like standing in a hall. And I thought more about that. It's more than that. Because I look back over my 25 years of sobriety, and it's been a really, really, really tough road, because I've had been flat broke and started over many times. I've had this daughter that absolutely drives me absolutely insane going in and out of my house. And yet I've held my head up. So it's more than like standing in the hall. It's like standing in a hall, and there's all these doors in the hall, and there's none open. My job is not to go over and start picking the locks. My job is not to go over and knock on the door. Maybe my job is to sweep the floor. Maybe my job is to go to another meeting. Maybe my job is to go to detox. Maybe my job is to go pick up a newcomer. Maybe my job is to help people set up for a conference. But my job is not to knock on the door. My job is to believe that God will open the door for me if I do his work. And sometimes you stand in the hall for a long time and there are no doors open. You think, he's abandoned me. And then all of a sudden you meet her or him and you get a new job and the daughter straightens out or the son straightens out or the mother straightens out and somebody gets cured with cancer and all the doors open and you're back living and carrying on. And then you go back one day and you go in there in the hall and all the doors are closed. And you start picking up the paper and going to the new meetings and holding out the hand. And so I thought maybe Chuck and Frank and these other guys, every now and then you're standing in the hall And you stand there, and the fear that the door will never open again for you. You take your own life, or you go back out and drink. But I'm living proof to tell you that Alpha used to say something that I just love. He said, God gives little horses little crosses, and he gives big crosses to big horses, and the big horses are the blessed ones. And I tell you, I have absolutely been blessed with the things. When I retired from Caesars, they promoted me, and I went down to get a job. They had a thing up on the wall, and they told me that they wanted me, you know. I went and looked, and it was a position open, and I went and looked at it. And the next day they come to me and say, how come your name on that is not on that list? I said, did you read that thing? They said, yeah, put your name up. I said, I can't, I don't qualify. They said, what are you talking about? I said, it says have a high school education or the equivalent. I said, listen, man, I ain't even close. They said, we'll be right back. They took it down, they come back, and he said, now go read it. It says the high school education or the equivalent are 25 years experience in the business. They said, how long you been in the business? I said, 25 years. They said, put your damn name up there. I already had the job and didn't know it. I want to thank Harlan and all the people for thinking. And you really, really make us feel welcome. I don't want to make this sound negative, but this is the least of all the things I do. My sponsor says this is dangerous. He said, don't ever think you are somebody. He said, you can put other people on the pedestal, but don't you ever climb up and sit. And he says, the more you speak, the more I want to see you down at Detox and down at St. Vincent's and in the other places. And so that's what I do. It's been, you know, once I get here, I've already met some great people that I absolutely love, and that's what usually happens to me. I'll come out of here with friends that I didn't have before. If you're new here, let somebody jump in the hole with you. I always end my pitch this way. This is in honor of my father. I got even with my mom. I was 17 years sober when my mom died. I was still locked in a pissed-off position when my father died, and I couldn't find a key because I didn't want to do the steps, the spiritual things that it talks about. There's a race in North Carolina that's there every year. And there's always 13 or 14 or 15 people, and whoever wins the race is the king for the year. It's a big thing. And so they all out there with their horses, and the fathers are in the winning circle except one. One father's back in the barn. And the guy in the barn asks him and says, why aren't you in the winning circle with all the rest of the fathers? And the father looked at the man in the barn and says, listen, if my son wins this race, he will not need me. But if he loses, I want to be here for him. I'm glad you were here for me when I got here. God bless you, and thank you very much.